Kim, thanks. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Left and it's Wendy Snyder, joined by the Feistmaster General, Eric Zorn. You know him from the Chicago Tribune, where he's been a columnist for over 100 years.
I have been, yes. I was actually one of the guys who wrote the columns backing Lincoln's candidacy.
Yep, and that was a good call.
It
you
was
guys
a good
did
call.
The right thing.
I urged him to run. He ran. What the rest is history. Literally history.
Didn't you say to him, wear a bigger hat? The hat you have on now is fine, the beanie, but wear the bigger hat.
he had a little press fedora on.
Right. I remember.
So, no, Abe, no, don't go. Okay. It's a bad look.
Eric, Wendy, and me, the three of us, we were discussing Melania Trump in the New York Post, these photos that have resurfaced. They're 20-some-odd years old, where Melania is without clothing. She's snuggling with another girl. And we were trying to figure out if this would even make a dent in anyone's mind anymore. Like, if this were Bess Truman, you could say, sorry, Harry, but you're done. These pictures are so damning. But with Donald Trump, it doesn't even make a dent, does it?
It doesn't. I've asked people, do you think that Hillary Clinton, if she had had five different children with three different wives, she would be a candidate for president? She wouldn't have been automatically disqualified for that alone.
Yeah.
I think there's a whole different set of rules that seem to apply to Donald Trump. And this is, I mean, the thing is like, okay, so Melania was a model, and this was before she even met him, right? And Lord knows, so many people have had naked pictures of themselves taken these days that it seems to be less and less disqualifying. But
isn't it kind of weird that it's the potential first lady? Everything you said is true, but it's hard to envision other first ladies in a similar situation.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, but so much of what's happened in the Trump campaign, so many things that he has said would have been disqualifying to any other candidate.
Right.
I mean, we've talked about this before. Like, Howard Dean essentially got drummed out of the presidential race for going, yeah!
For naming states real loudly.
And people were really criticizing. Remember when Al Gore sighed during the debate?
Yeah.
They said, that's not presidential. You sighed. You know, and was it George H.W. Bush checked his watch during the debate? They're saying, oh, that man doesn't have the temperament to be president. And all those kind of things are just out the window for this one man. I'm not sure that we won't revert to that next time around.
So how is it that none of these things not only damage him, but they tend to make him stronger? His polls always go up whenever any of these
things
happen.
Well, his whole brand is about being never apologizes. He's a strong man. He's a tough guy.
And people are so sick of politicians. They just really want something new and fresh. Regardless of how bad it may be, it at least will demonstrate change.
Well, I did a piece for the Sunday Tribune about Jesse Ventura, if you remember him. In 1998,
sure.
He won the governorship of Minnesota. And he was similar in a lot of ways to Trump. He was more libertarian, and he had some more, you know, a few more liberal views. But he came in and basically said, you know, this regular politics is for the birds, and I'm going to say what I think. And he was running against two, you know, a really mainstream Republican, really mainstream Democrat, and he ran as a Reform Party candidate. And he was just this like blast of fresh air, and he was also the guy who was basically saying, up yours to the political establishment. And people were like in the mood for change. And the weird thing about that was that this was the late 90s. Things weren't that bad. The economy was roaring along, right? I mean, everywhere.
Yeah.
And in fact, what had happened in Minnesota, the government, state government, was split. So it was Democrats, Republicans. They were split in the legislature and so on. They weren't making a lot of progress. So there was this sense that we have about Congress now in Washington, that we also have about the legislature in Springfield, which is when you have divided government, you don't get a lot done in general.
Right.
And it's kind of by design in some ways. But he played right into that, and people were saying this guy's a joke, just like they said Trump is a joke. He's just a celebrity, just like Trump's just a celebrity. And he's just trying to do this to enhance his brand because Ventura was a radio talk show host, former
WWF
wrestler.
About that.
And all these things, all these eerie parallels, including the fact that he ended up winning.
Yeah.
Was he a good governor?
Well, I actually read up quite a bit about that. And you know, basically he got bored with it because it wasn't as easy as he thought. And he didn't even run for re-election.
Right.
And he sent a bunch of tax rebate checks to people because the economy was going well. And he did some things that were good. He had some programs that weren't so good. And basically he was kind of this blip. That people look back and go, yeah, that's kind of weird. We did that, didn't we? But And one thing I also said in the column was, you know, the governor of Minnesota doesn't have the nuclear codes. So the amount of damage that a governor of Minnesota could do in 4 years is pretty limited. He also doesn't appoint people to lifetime appointments on the Supreme Court, which is what a president of the United States does. So,
but everything you said about how people in general, and I include myself in this, are kind of fed up with the political process and the people who run. I've heard many people say, why would we want anybody to be president who wants to be president? It's such a undesirable job when you stop and think about it. Shouldn't we disclude anybody who openly
anybody who
says, I want to be the president? We go, no, that's not the person for us.
As soon as you announce your interest in it,
We don't want you.
Erase your name from the list.
But if we're all in agreement, or most of us are in agreement, that the political process is not what it could be or should be, and I am so open to an outsider running for office, even as high as the presidency, but this guy just seems dangerous.
He does. I mean, there's a certain value in experience, because you're dealing with the president's dealing with international situations, and also trying to pull the levers of a very complicated and large government, and deal with all these various interests in Congress. It takes some skill. One of the things that Republicans told me over and over again when Barack Obama was running in 2008 was, he's never run anything.
Right.
This guy's never been in any office, except he was a U.S. senator for 4 years, and U.S. senator is not a job where you're in charge of a whole lot. And he was a state senator before that. Otherwise, they'd always say, he's just a community organizer, But you had to, the idea was that here's a guy with a great deal of intellect and seemed like he had a lot of common sense. And, you surround yourself with people who can do those kind of things. I think that's sort of what Trump is saying, is like, I've never been elected to anything, but I have run successful businesses. And I'm going to surround myself with people who know all these foreign policy matters. So that's the thing. But this idea that somebody's going to come in from the outside. I mean, Obama was not that much of an outsider, really. I mean, he was part of Congress. He was promising all kinds of change. And when he got there, he realized that our system of government is set up basically not to do a whole lot, especially with the filibuster. You have to have – and at one point, he had 60 votes in the Senate, which was enough to overcome filibusters. And he had a majority in the House, and he was barely able to get through some things. And the Obamacare bill that he passed had to have all kinds of compromises in it in order to bring over those last couple of somewhat conservative Democrats. It's hard to make big changes. That's something that we should all, I think, feel a little bit
relieved,
good about. Yeah, I mean, it's a sense of calm can be over, which is like, in terms of domestic policy, certainly that no matter how nutty your president is, there are a lot of checks and balances. Foreign policy is a little different.
And so, if Trump wins, in my opinion, again, we talked about this ad nauseum, what can I do? I'm not moving. I'm not moving to another country. He's our president. I respect the office, and I'll hope for the best.
Hope for the best. Well, have you been following this story about the Gold Star family, the Muslim family?
Oh, sure.
Family?
The Khans.
And the interview with George Stephanopoulos. Did you plenty of that or talked about earlier today?
We haven't, but it's...
He asked Donald Trump, have you ever... The accusation against the guy was, you've never sacrificed. The Muslim father who's lost his son in the army in Iraq said, you've never sacrificed. And Trump's response was, well, yeah, I've sacrificed. I've made businesses and so on.
I've worked hard.
And I just wrote a thing online, and it's going to be probably posted by now, of what Trump should have said to that sacrifice question. And can I read that after we...
Yeah. We'll come back with that and more. It's Eric Zorn joining us, Bill and Wendy on WGN. Eric Zorn is joining Wendy and myself. He of the Chicago Tribune, one of the fine, fine columnists our city has, and we're talking about Donald Trump's relationship, quote unquote, with the Khan family. Just give a little bit of background on this Gold Star family.
Well, really quickly, the son of the Khan family was a captain in the army, and he died in Iraq in 2004. And Mr. Khan gave a speech at the Democratic Convention on Thursday night, in which one of his accusations against Donald Trump was, you have never sacrificed anything. We have sacrificed so much, and you have sacrificed nothing. And then George Stephanopoulos asked Trump about this on Friday for taping for this week. And he came back and said, well, I've sacrificed. I've created businesses. And Hillary Clinton's speechwriters wrote that line. And, it was like the
he's provided tens of thousands of jobs, and he's worked hard to build
his business.
And
that's the sacrifice he's made for his country. And what I've just written, and I just wanted to read this to you, this is going to be posted online, is what Trump should have said to the sacrifice question. When someone said, you haven't sacrificed anything. And Stephanopoulos said, he said you have sacrificed nothing and for no one. What would you say to that father? And I said, he should have said this. He's absolutely right. I've made no sacrifices for my country. I've lived a blessed, charmed life, enjoying the freedom that has been guarded and guaranteed by those who have sacrificed, who have risked and in many cases lost their lives fighting for our great country. My success is built upon and sustained by the sacrifices of others going back 240 years. And the same, of course, is true of Hillary Clinton, of Barack Obama, of Mitt Romney, of Paul Ryan, and of you, George Stephanopoulos, and the vast majority of the members of the media who thrilled to Mr. Khan's accusation against me. The Department of Veterans Affairs estimates that a little more than 7% of all living Americans, about 13% of males, have ever served in the military. The rest of us may be patriotic. We may pay a considerable sum in taxes to fund our fighting forces. We may advocate on behalf of veterans and salute them at parades, but we cannot claim to have sacrificed for our country. What the fortunate, grateful majority can do, however, is strive to create a world in which far fewer families like the Khans make the ultimate sacrifice, a world that is safe and peaceful, free from the threat of tyranny and terrorism. No, my family and I have not sacrificed for the liberty we enjoy, but like tens of millions of others in the same situation, that does not make us any less grateful for those who have sacrificed or any less determined to serve well that nation to which they gave so much.
That would have been a great answer.
That would have been an answer. See, I should be writing speeches for somebody. Right?
But so un-Trump.
So un-Trump.
It's such a beautiful answer, but it's not. It doesn't seem to be words that would come out of his mouth.
Way off brand. But, you know, I was thinking a lot about the concept of sacrifice. And,
yeah.
And you know, the truth is that, you know, around this table here, most of us, we haven't. My kids aren't in the military. Kids are in the military,
no.
and I don't have relatives who've died serving our country in any of the wars. You know, my dad was in the Navy back in the 40s, but
yeah.
But you know, I mean, in terms of an actual sacrifice that I personally have made, no. And I think we need to acknowledge that and realize that we are asking families, we are asking the volunteers, people who go over to fight for us, to make incredible sacrifices for us, and we should always be grateful for that. And we shouldn't pretend that, you know, the little things that we do, you know, like, oh, I created some jobs, or gosh, I've written some columns that encourage patriotism, that that's a
sacrifice.
It's not a sacrifice.
Very right.
Can
concept.
I read this text? How did that family sacrifice? The only guy who lost anything was the guy who died. He made the sacrifice. He was a fully grown adult and made his own decision. They're coming in fast
and
fierce.
They lost
their parents
son,
did not stop him or try to stop him, nor did they offer him up as a sacrifice. This listener cannot really understand what a sacrifice that is to lose your child while fighting for this country.
That seems like a very tin-eared response. I think that when you leap to the defense of Donald Trump in a situation like this, it's really an error in, you know, just, you know, politically and morally, ethically, it's an error to say, like, that was a smart thing to say. And you know, Trump's way out of this is to apologize. And he never, ever apologizes.
So, I don't apologize. You
know. What about him? The mother, Ghazala Khan is her name, who stood alongside of her husband while he made his speech but said nothing. Donald Trump is attacking her, saying that she was told to say nothing when that wasn't exactly the case. She opted to say nothing because, as she has said, when she sees pictures of her son or thinks about it, she just gets very emotional. It would have been impossible for her to have pulled off a successful speech, in her opinion. So why would Trump put an attack on her? I don't understand.
Well,
that.
it was
and their culture that they won't let a woman speak.
It was an attack on the Muslim faith, and the implication was that because you know, it is true, I think, to say that in the Islamic world, women have a secondary role. I mean, there's no getting around that. But
right, that's a definite. But in this particular instance,
it was an extremely tone deaf thing to say. I mean, she's still a grieving mother. She's up there, and she wrote a very powerful essay in the Washington Post. If you get it, we don't have time now, but if you guys later in the day, John McCain's statement today about this case was just really powerful.
Yeah.
McCain, who knows what it means to sacrifice,
yes,
for this country, who spent all the time in a prisoner of war camp,
despite the fact that he was captured.
Even though he was captured, yes, of course. But that, you know, a genuine hero, you know, a guy like Bob Dole, who gave his left arm essentially to the country.
Yeah.
So, I mean, these are people who, that is sacrifice. That is, and the families also pay a price for that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I think dragging in, you know, the Muslim faith. The woman wrote a very powerful piece for the Washington Post over the weekend that talked about the fact that what she would have said she wasn't, like, she couldn't speak. She has a voice, but she's still grieving too hard to have spoken. But the symbolism of those parents up there. And again, you know, I criticized the Republican convention for putting up a woman who's lost her son in the Benghazi raid for saying, "I blame Hillary Clinton for this loss." Now, she didn't. This family didn't get up and blame Republicans for the loss of their son. It was a very personal attack on Trump, and it had to do not so much with his foreign policy stuff, but his interest in keeping Muslims out of this country and screening them and so on. So that's really what he was talking about. And the message behind that speech was, look, Muslims and Muslim Americans or people who are immigrants who are Muslim can be very patriotic, can serve their country to the last full measure.
Yep.
And that's an important thing to remember when we're trying, especially when we're trying to foment these divisions that Donald Trump is trying to foment.
I want to apologize. We have several callers who all have very good points to make, and unfortunately we are out of time right now. But thank you, everybody, for checking in with us through text and by phone. I wish we had more time. We don't, but we appreciate it. Eric, thank you. We appreciate you as well. It's Eric Zorn. Read him in the Chicago Tribune. We'll find out what's coming up on the Wintrust Business Lunch in a moment. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.